It's not about charity, it's about responsibility. The words of Korean actor Jung Woo-sung as he described his activities bringing awareness to global refugee situations. In fact, since his appointment as UNHCR Goodwill Ambassador for Korea in 2015, he's been unfailingly speaking up for refugee rights, even risking losing popularity amid the rising anti-refugee movement in this country. We saw that triggered by the influx of Yemeni refugees to Jeju Island last year. For further discussion on this global responsibility, let's welcome Kelly Clements, Deputy High Commissioner for the United Nations Refugee Agency, who's actually visiting Seoul at the moment, and we have the privilege of being joined by her on the line. Good morning to you.
Good morning to you. Thank you for having us.
And the last time you visited South Korea was July 2016. What brings you to Seoul this time?
Well, in fact, it's too long since I was here last. It's part of our regular discussions, of course, with the government in terms of refugee issues. And, of course, this is a critical time in the world today with regard to global displacement. We're seeing record numbers throughout the world. Over 68 million people are forcibly displaced or uprooted from their homes. And Korea, of course, has been a very important partner of the UN Refugee Agency. Throughout, they were part of the Global Compact on Refugees that was adopted in December of last year, which was a historic agreement, a blueprint, really, of how the international community will help to support refugees and host countries that are trying to provide life-saving, critical protection and aid, but also solutions for those that are displaced.
In terms of South Korea's contribution financially to UNHCR, our private donations are 20th. And the government's contributions rank 21st on the donors list. This is as of September last year. How have your conversations been going with the government?
Really quite productive. The combination, as you mentioned, between the private support of the Korean people, who are among the most generous in the world. In fact, last year contributed one of the highest totals around the world of $44 million, and combine that with support from the government. The Korean people and government have provided almost $70 million to the UN Refugee Agency. Of course, this is something that's most valuable to us to be able to respond in over 130 countries around the world, 450 hotspots. We have a very large network which the Korean government and people have supported in some of the most difficult places, and it's essential. We have an $8.5 billion budget, and unfortunately, humanitarian need continues to increase, and we need donors, including the Koreans, to be able to support our efforts.
From a financial point of view, that's great, but do we also need to see more in the way of attitudes changing here, especially in the wake of the case of Yemeni asylum seekers? Just to briefly recap, they flew to Jeju Island last year, majority of them, 412, received a one-year humanitarian stay permit under which they could find legal employment, also leave Jeju. About 250 of them left Jeju Island to work elsewhere in the country as of December last year. But when we saw that influx, there was also obviously a lot of opposition to them, fear about their Muslim background, almost myths being shared online. Is that a great concern for you?
Well, you know, it was quite an unusual circumstance last year when the Yemenis came to Jeju. This is something that the Korean people are not used to. In many circumstances, these situations that we deal with, the conflicts around the world are a very long way away, and this was probably the largest largest influx in several decades. And so we understand that this can be different, it can be foreign, it can sometimes be scary. However, many of these refugees and asylum seekers are fleeing from that kind of violence and persecution that perhaps the Korean people also feared at the beginning. However, what we've seen is really an outpouring of support, people being very generous with their time, businesses offering potential for those Yemenis to be able to start to rebuild their lives, and really connections between people when there's that human contact, that people-to-people contact. I think that there's a realization that, refugees in, are just like you or just like me, trying to make a way in the world. They're trying to live in dignity and safely, and they're trying to provide for their families. And so this is, obviously it's been part of our discussions here in Seoul these last 2 days, will continue to be later today, in terms of how we can continue to support the Korean government's efforts to be able to manage, even when there is an arrival of a group as large as this one, but also thinking about those other host countries in other parts of the world that are dealing with tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, and sometimes millions. So I think with some help and some support, with public messaging from the government and certainly from private sector and the citizens of this country, this is something that we see as a positive step as opposed to a negative one.
Part of the government's role in managing this, though, has to surely be protecting these vulnerable groups, as well as convincing as much of the population as possible that they are considering their interests.
Yes, of course. Of course, and in fact, that is a responsibility of any government. You're protecting your country, you're managing very in orderly and humane way your borders and the like, and a strong asylum system. And Korea is, one of the only countries and a leader in this region in terms of having a strong refugee act to be able to provide for a refugee status determination. And the strength of that system to be able to protect people for fleeing war and persecution, but also make sure that it is not abused, is certainly the sovereign right of a country like Korea. And we stand as the UN Refugee Agency in a position to be able to offer that kind of support and advice to make sure that it's protection-friendly, as we'd like to say, but also make sure it's as strong as possible for the Republic of Korea.
Of course, the government here over decades has opened up to many more North Korean refugees, which seems like an issue that's distinct from many of these others, partly perhaps because of the shared ethnicity, even if North Korean refugees might find themselves also discriminated against. Do we have to do something to tackle xenophobia, or is it something that goes through more slowly with gentle cultural change?
I think it's probably a combination of both. There need to be strong messages that are sent in terms of a welcome for the other, a welcome for the foreigner. And we are quite concerned about the rising sense of xenophobia in parts of the world. We're quite concerned about political leaders that tend to use fear to win ballots during an election. And we think that there are ways that communities, multicultural, and certainly ways to be able to integrate and welcome refugees and those that cannot stay in their home countries, cannot stay in perhaps even neighboring countries, they add to a community, and the connections that are made can actually enrich a society as opposed to something to be feared. This is something that across the board we need to be doing, both at the local level, but also institutionally, national and international level, in terms of trying to stem the rising tide of xenophobia.
Aside from those North Koreans I referred to before, South Korea's granted some 2,900 refugee statuses and humanitarian stay visas to people who are fleeing from dangers in their home countries like Syria, Pakistan, Myanmar, and more. We recently spoke with actually a woman from Thailand who received refugee recognition here after being accused of laissez-majesté in Thailand, a kind of bizarre, seemingly outdated regulation, just for sharing a Facebook post that could be deemed critical of the king there. But do we need to do more to make her life easier and many others like that through steps to facilitate social integration?
Absolutely. Integration is a key part of the success of any kind of a refugee resettlement process or an asylum seeker that may even be here for a short period of time in terms of a humanitarian visa. But integration is key, and integration is what I mentioned earlier. It's the people-to-people connections, and there are lots of good examples of this around the world. So it's good policies being put into place, the ability for refugees or asylum seekers to be able to work or to be able to earn for their family, to be connected to services in their communities. The faith-based community tends to be extremely important in any integration process, but it's also an opportunity really to build a broader community. So integration is really critical. The more that you see isolation of those that are not part of a community, the more likely you are to see the sorts of things we talked about earlier in terms of the fear of the other. The more one is part of a community economically, socially, culturally, the more likely it is to succeed in terms of the person is to succeed in terms of being able to not only rebuild their own lives, but add to the economic life of that community.
Am I right in suggesting you're particularly concerned about the vulnerability of refugee women?
Yes, indeed.
Can I just briefly read the guidelines here from UNHCR? International protection goes beyond adherence to legal principles. The protection of refugee women requires planning and a great deal of common sense. Can we rely on common sense?
You know, we have extensive guidelines and policy with regard to refugee women, and there's not a doubt as to why we do this. In fact, 70% of the overall population of refugees are both women and the people they care for, children. And I think unless there are guidelines in place that talk about not just particular vulnerabilities, but also the contributions that refugee women make in a community, I think sometimes we need to have those around the world. We're not just talking about legal protections here. We're also talking about physical protections, as basic as making sure there's a lock on the bathroom door, that there are lights in a community, that a refugee woman has access to her own legal documentation. Each of these types of protections will make it possible for that woman and her family to be able to flourish. And without it, we can see extremes like sexual and gender-based violence. If you, for example, cut off the means to provide for one's family, unfortunately, some women have to then revert to finding a way to make a living in another way, which we obviously want to prevent. So it's essential that we are very aware and focused on making sure that refugee women do not fall through the cracks in terms of the protection we're trying to provide around the world.
And presumably that also feeds trafficking and lots of knock-on atrocities.
Indeed.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much, Kelly Clements, Deputy High Commissioner for the United Nations Refugee Agency. It's a privilege, as I said before, to have you share your time with us while you're in Seoul.
Thank you so much. Have a good day.